welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 116. Not having a crawfish boil will get you a show cause. Recorded Tuesday, February 25th, 2014. On this week's roundtable, Shane Bailey is joined by Drew Blair and Nick Jones. They discuss the coaching horizon in the SEC, and is not replacing Martin and Grant the right move? Drew asks Shane if Coach Cal is using Randles the right way, and a look at some of the SEC players in the NFL Combine. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey. Getting on up there in the basketball season, I was looking today. It looks like most teams are down to three or four games left in the regular season. So we've got, I'd like to say we have a lot to talk about basketball, but if you've been listening to the last couple podcasts, you understand our thoughts on this. So we're going to get right into the action about SEC sports. So Southeastern Conference, for those that don't know what that stands for. We do football, basketball, a little baseball. I believe there's baseball games going on as we speak. Down on West End, there was a game for my alma mater being played down there at Vanderbilt today. So there is baseball being played, apparently. And so we'll probably not talk about that since Blair's not here, one of our other hosts. But we try to do this weekly. We do it from a fan's perspective. So we all have some sort of allegiance here. And so one of my original hosts is back joining us tonight, Drew Young. Welcome, Drew.
Shane, it's good to be back. I've served my show cause. This is by far my longest drought from the podcast. And, you know, I'm definitely contrite for my sins that I've apparently done. And I'm back and ready to go.
Well, you know, you didn't have a summer cookout last year. That could have been the reason versus having a cookout.
Exactly. When you don't have a crawfish boil, that can get you a show cause. And I had about a 2.5 or maybe 3 month show cause. So it's good to be back. Happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Also joining us tonight from Bama Hammer and an Alabama fan, Nick Jones. Welcome, Nick.
Guys, it's great to be here. You know, Shane, thinking about the March Madness deal and everything coming up, does it not seem like it normally just sneaks up on you and you're just ready to make your bracket and before you know it, you're ready to fill it out? This year, like, I've kind of been wishing that the season was over by now. So welcome to SEC sports, right? Basketball, at least.
I'm telling you what, it cannot get here fast enough. And so we've got the Vol Nation, and for those that do not understand Drew's references there, he's definitely a UT fan. Nick is our Alabama fan, and I'm a Kentucky fan, and by the tone of my voice, you probably can't tell that right now. I mean, it's basketball season. We should be excited as opposed to ready to jump off a ledge. But that's the state of the Big Blue Nation right now.
Yeah, me and Nick are real sad for you. You know, you're like, what, number 11 or 10 in the country? Probably looking at a top 2 or 3 seed in the NCAA tournament, and you're upset when you lose. Tennessee gets beat by Texas A&M over the weekend, and
it's a normal day, right?
Yeah, unfortunately it is.
Well, let's talk about that, because it just seems like every loss from the Vol Nation, more rumblings occur that Konzo's out, and you know, you've got on your lower third there, free Bruce Pearl. You know, you're ready to welcome him back with the open arms.
Please, God, just answer my prayer. I'm you know, I don't know if we've had a lot of prayers on the SEC Sports Roundtable podcast, and I don't know your stance on that, but dear God, please bring Bruce Pearl back home to Knoxville. We're ready to have him back. There's a petition that was started. This is kind of crazy. I don't know if y'all talked about this. Petition was started. They've got over 21,000 signatures, which is pretty impressive on a petition to hire Bruce Pearl back.
It's grown another 2,000. It's over 23,000.
So you obviously have followed this. You do know the situation. You know, it's tough. I think that, I don't know, Konzo Martin's was a good basketball player, but he clearly is not cut out to coach in the SEC. He's trying to do the same kind of basketball as what he did at Missouri State. Is that where he was at Missouri State? Somewhere around there. And it doesn't work. I mean, he needs to be playing big boy basketball, and he's trying to win with defense, and Tennessee's defense isn't good enough. And you just can't get swept by Texas A&M and let, you know, a 20% shooter beat you on two game winning shots. And that's exactly what's happened. And it's time for a change. I think that Nick is going to be on the same bandwagon I am, and we'll both be looking for coaches. And, you know, it's absolutely time. I mean, I feel like he's lost the team. I know it's only been 3 years, and it's tough to follow. And I hate to say Bruce Pearl's a legend. I don't think he's a legend in coaching, but he's definitely a legend in Tennessee coaching. So it's tough to follow that, and I think it's time to bring in some new blood.
Well, I mean, it's evident that he doesn't know when he should keep a timeout in his pocket, right?
That's tough. That's bad luck on his part. On one hand, it's okay to call timeout if you feel like your team's not getting a good look. Most basketball coaches will tell you, you don't call a timeout with 3 seconds or under 3 seconds left. It's just not enough time to get a really good look. Now, fortunately for Martin, Tennessee did get a really good look after that timeout, and they got the ball.
Unbelievable look.
To give him credit, I think that was somewhat of a designed option. I don't think it was just a breakdown on A&M's part. I believe, you know, that was an option. He cleared out. McCray came all the way around, and the defense, you know, he got a seal on his defender and got a really good look. And bottom line is, you got to make a free throw. But it is fitting, though, that Martin calls a timeout when Antonio Barton hits his first three in SEC play, it seems like, at least, and would have been a game winner. But, you know, what you do there is, if you're Tennessee, you go to overtime and you just stick it down their throats and beat them. But instead, Tennessee gets beat by 3 points. So, we'll holler, Quanzo.
And we kind of talked about this pre-show notes. I mean, the local radio station had a big bonanza for their sports fans here in Nashville, and I think they had Butch Jones in and a couple of Tennessee Titans and somebody from the Predators, even though they were still a lot of those folks over in Sochi. Bruce Pearl shows up Sunday afternoon to do the talk, and he comes strolling in decked all out in orange. You know, I mean, he can't give up the ties to it. And the good news for you guys as Volunteer fans is there's precedence that's been set in NCAA that they'll welcome a coach back. Just look at Louisville and football and all the transgressions he had. You know, I mean, he basically left that program high and dry. I mean, the slogan up there when Bobby P was there the first time was L yes. Well, he said, L yes, I'm leaving. And now he says, L yes, I'm back home. So, I mean, luckily for you, there's been some precedent set recently in the football genre or the football programs to allow somebody to come back and be welcomed. So I liked Bruce Pearl. You know I did. As much as I disliked Tennessee, that was a great game every time Tennessee played Kentucky. He got the marketing side of it. I don't ever remember Tennessee fans being as excited as they were for basketball when Bruce Pearl was there. I mean, it is a lethal combination with the excitement that Butch Jones brings to the football program right now. If you could add that to Bruce Pearl and what he could bring to that, just watch out. I mean, that's it. It would be impressive, and it would be a great move for Tennessee. I would sit here and hate it every second of it, but it would be a good move.
And, you know, Shane, I don't think you would hate it, because I don't think as a Kentucky fan you're afraid of a Bruce Pearl Tennessee team. I think Kentucky's a good enough brand name, and they're going to be good enough to where I think you welcome that challenge. And if you're a Florida or a Kentucky, you need other teams to be good in the SEC to help, you know, get you ready for the NCAA tournament and to bring a little prestige. Now, if you're an Alabama fan or a Vanderbilt fan, I don't think you want Bruce Pearl back in this league unless he's coaching your team. And that's just my biased opinion. But, no, I think Bruce Pearl is smart. I think he would absolutely come back to Tennessee. He knows that he can turn Tennessee into a top, what would you say, 15, 20 program in the country. I mean, he did that already, so there's no reason to think he can't do it again. I mean, Thompson Bowling Arena seats, you know, 21,000, 22,000 people, and he can fill it up. I mean, he can absolutely make sure that the stadium gets filled and he can take a team to a NCAA tournament 5 or 6 years in a row. So he's proven it there. But on the other hand, when he does wear orange and he does get talked about and CBS picks up that there's a petition going out, I think that just brings notoriety to Bruce Pearl and it actually gives him a little leverage of where he's going to coach next year. I read an article, or I was reading it was a post on a message board, and somebody said Tennessee could probably get Bruce Pearl for about $1 million a year. And I think that people are underestimating the amount of leverage that Bruce Pearl would actually have in coaching. I think he could command a big salary because that's clearly the fans' number one choice. And if Tennessee decided they wanted to hire him back, I don't think money would be the option. I think it would be getting over the egg on your face of we're going to rehire a guy that we fired. So I hope they can do that.
I mean, realistically, if you look even outside Tennessee fans, they think that a three-year show cause penalty for having lied about a cookout to a recruit that didn't even go to your program was a little excessive. And so, you know, I, from that standpoint, you look outside of the SEC, and there's probably a lot of programs that have put inquiries into Bruce Pearl and to gauge his interest in coming back to coaching. And it's evident. If you've ever listened to him, I mean, he does radio spots here on a regular basis. He's not lost a step. He still knows the recruiting side inside and out. I do agree with you that it would be a top 20 program the next year with the same players. He's able to get so much out of those players. He gets every ounce out of those players. And you're right. What I don't like is to see Tennessee win, and that's just me. When you tell me that it's good for the program and for Kentucky to have another SEC team be relevant, we've talked about that the last couple of weeks, how bad and mediocre the SEC is, and you're right in that standpoint. It's also a team that Kentucky would be up for to play every well, who knows how many times. They don't get to play them once this year.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say every twice a year, but who knows what the next schedule is going to be like. So from that standpoint, you're right. Kentucky fans know deep down in their heart that it's good for Kentucky to have another team relevant and be talked about, to know that they're going to the NCAA. It only helps everyone's RPI. It's just, you know me and my hatred for the Vol Nation sometimes that I just hate to see you guys win and do well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Shane, it just – not to beat a dead horse, but here's my point. If Konzo Martin is not given another year, which he should not get another year, if Bruce Pearl is not the coach at Tennessee, it is a huge mistake. I wouldn't say unforgivable, because I'll follow whatever coach goes in there, but you better get a big name hire. And it scares me. I think in my heart, I'd like to think that Tennessee would bring back Bruce Pearl, but I really see it as a long shot. And I think that is incredible short-sightedness, and unless there's more stuff that we don't know about, it doesn't make any sense to me that that other coaches, you know, if the NCAA didn't make that big of a deal about it, what if they said, hey, you can't lie to us, and we're going to give you a 4-game suspension? Tennessee wouldn't have fired him. They fired him because of the backlash that the NCAA was going to do. So he's served 3 years, and there's no other coach that has ever served a bigger penalty for something of that magnitude. Yeah, he lied to the NCAA. You don't do that. But if you've served your penalty, he's going to come back somewhere. Why not, you know, why not hire him at the school that we know he can succeed at?
Well, and it's a new regime too, correct? I mean,
it's a new athletic director, but it's a different, it's still the same president. Jimmy Cheek is still the president or the chancellor at UT. And that's where the stumbling block is, they think.
Okay. So it's just all the way up to the AD level. It's not higher than that.
Correct.
I was thinking there was a change there too, but you're right. I'd forgot about that.
Well, it used to be Mike Hamilton, and now it's Dave Hart as the athletic director. So we've got a different athletic director.
Let me ask you this. If for some reason they win their next 4 games, that's going to put them a win against somebody big, right? Who else do you have? You got Vanderbilt?
We have nobody of consequence left.
Nobody of consequence. Missouri?
No, I mean, because we've already played Missouri twice. We don't get a Missouri. We don't get a Kentucky. We don't get a Florida. And is there, in all honesty, is there any other team in the SEC besides those three possibly really only a Florida and Kentucky. So no, there's no, I mean, under no circumstance should Tennessee lose another game in the regular season, but they will.
Yeah, no, you've got Missouri left. I thought
no,
you
we
stood
played,
it.
We played Missouri. Is that right?
Yep, you've got Mississippi State, Vanderbilt.
Maybe you're right.
Auburn and Missouri.
You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. I was confused. I was confusing that Texas A&M team with Missouri. We played Texas A&M for a second time. But I don't know if this is what you mean, Shane. If Tennessee went undefeated, won the SEC tournament, made it to the Elite Eight, I'd still want to get rid of Martin. That's my opinion.
That's your opinion, but would he be gone? That's the question.
I'm afraid that he won't be gone if they lose the rest of their games. But he should be. I mean, they clearly do not play for Martin the way they played for Bruce Pearl. And, you know, the Tennessee, we don't accept mediocrity. You know, you can tell by our 10 years of sucking at every sport right now. Look at our baseball team. You want to talk baseball? Tennessee's undefeated.
Who have they played?
Purdue? I have no idea. I don't really follow college baseball. What about the softball team? Number one in the nation, undefeated.
There you go. You were trying to get.
And by the same token, I don't want to change the subject or anything, but it's so similar to look at what Tennessee, the situation that Tennessee and Alabama are in, for basketball at least, because there's a lot of rumblings I'm in the heart of it here in Tuscaloosa, but to fire Anthony Grant. And, you know, you think back to 2009 when Anthony Grant was hired, you know, actually one of the last hires that Alabama's former athletic director, Mal Moore, made. So there's always that tie-in. But there's several other things that go on now. I mean, people lose sight of this. He's getting paid $1.9 million. I mean, he's demanding like a top 25, top 30, probably even higher than that salary. And he hasn't done anything. I mean, Alabama's not going to make the NCAA tournament unless they pull off some miraculous, you know, Georgia run that they did back, you know, several years ago in the SEC tournament. And, you know, he's made the tournament one time in 5 years. And, you know, Alabama's in danger of not even making the NIT. They probably will just because of TV ratings and stuff. But, I mean, his first year he didn't even make the NIT. So, but, you know, I'm kind of with you. You guys and Drew, I'm not even sure. I really don't think Alabama's going to fire Anthony Grant this year because he's owed $5 million at the end of this year if he's fired. There's so many other things. He's got the best recruiting class he's ever had. He's got two McDonald's All-Americans, which has never happened in Alabama history. He's got the backing of a lot of people down here. And, I mean, this will be Bill Battle, a Tennessee guy, his first big move. And, I mean, this is a number two sport, I guess you would say, at Alabama. So, I mean, I don't know. Is this the splash that Bill Battle wants to make in his first full year as the athletic director?
Number two, isn't it number three behind gymnastics down there?
That is true. And let's keep this in mind. Alabama, and back to the Bruce Pearl token, and this is another thing. Let's just say Alabama fires Anthony Grant and Tennessee snatches up Bruce Pearl, which, you know, those two things happening in the same year, obviously kind of isn't, probably won't happen. But anyway, say that happens. I cannot name you a guy that Alabama should hire. You know, last time around, they were looking at a guy, Scott Sutton, who, you know, was a guy that I kind of liked out of Oral Roberts. But, I mean, a big-name hire that Alabama's looking to, you know, especially with ever since Saban came, you know, it's got to be a big name, right?
Now, is that a kid of Sutton, Eddie Sutton?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I mean, he's had a good history at Oral Roberts, taking them. It is. Yeah, it's his youngest son. There you go.
There we go.
But anyway, so back to my point.
All goes back to the nation.
Yeah. Alabama needs a guy that can put butts in the seats at Coleman Coliseum. Alabama has, you know, essentially an oversized Coliseum for the way that the basketball team is performing, 16,000, I think it is. And they pack that out every Friday night for gymnastics. They sell it out. I'm not kidding you. You can walk into Coleman Coliseum.
That's what I said. They're number three behind gymnastics.
Do what?
That's what I said. You're number three behind gymnastics.
That's what I'm telling you. And softball, too. You think about that. They've won a national championship. Cheerleading's won a national championship in the last 5 years. But basketball's sitting here in the dark. So
I don't know. It's tough because I think Anthony Grant's a good basketball coach. I like that hire. I've always been afraid a little bit, you know, of that team. And Tennessee had struggled against them. Even when Pearl was there, they struggled against Alabama, definitely when they played on the road. But, you know, it's one of those things where I agree with you, you know, unless you can get like a Shaka Smart or you're going to get a Greg Marshall or something like that, like, which I know is not a huge name hire, but they're, it's the same. I mean, there's no difference between Anthony Grant and those other guys. I mean, he was Shaka Smart, you know, where he came from. I mean, they're the same guy. So I don't think that Anthony Grant can't coach anymore. I think that he needs like a kick in the butt and say, you know, he's got to do what he can do, because I feel like you're right. Alabama only made the tournament once, but there were 2 years in a row that I could not believe Alabama didn't get in. They were that bubble team, and they should have made the NCAA tournament. They were good enough, and they didn't make it. And I would hope that they can, you know, turn it around a little bit. I would. And here's the tough thing is, you know, you've had 5 years, I guess, of Grant, and you're showing a little bit of patience. I've had 3 years of Martin, and I'm ready to get rid of him. But if I was, you know, I would think that I wouldn't be upset with Grant as my coach if I was at Alabama.
Yeah, and that is true. And I love Anthony Grant, to be honest with you. I mean, I love the hire. Like you said, he was the hottest name in coaching coming off Billy Donovan's staff. You know, I think he was there for about 10 years. Just had all the pedigree. He had, you know, won at a mid-major, put VCU on the map, essentially, and you're still seeing that continuation with Shaka Smart today. But something doesn't work, and he is a great defensive coach. I mean, Alabama can play any team in the nation and hold them to 55 to 65 points, and that should win you the game. But when you play like Alabama does on offense, it rarely does. You know, I mean, it's crazy, and I don't know why. I mean, we don't have big men that can score. Every freshman that he's brought in that shows development, I'm talking about Devonta Pollard, he was arrested this summer. You know, he was like a top 100 recruit. You've got Jimmy Taylor, who's 6'10", looks like a great guy. You see him on paper, he's 6'10", he's got some weight to him, and then he comes in, and he's just like, he has no muscle on his body. He's just now developing into a low post scorer, and Alabama's biggest threat on the inside, which has become kind of a thing in Alabama basketball. You look back at what was the guy's name? I'm blanking. But Alabama has had continually, they've had guys that could score in the low post, but they're extremely small. Jermichael Green is who I'm thinking of. He was 6'9". And Nick Jacobs actually removed himself from the team. He took an indefinite leave of absence last week, and he was Alabama's biggest scoring threat down low. So I don't know. And it's kind of weird because Anthony Grant has had some pretty amazing recruiting classes, if you think about it. I mean, Trevor Lacy, a guy that was on Duke's radar for a while. You look at Levi Randolph and all these guys, and now the recruiting class that he has coming in this year, the guy can recruit. But I don't know, maybe you guys can, maybe outside eyes will help out with this, but is he not developing the talent? Is he, I don't know.
Well, I got two things to say on it. I mean, just because you have a great recruiting class doesn't bode well. I mean, was it South Carolina's coach, the old Western guy, had his best, Darren Horn, had his best recruiting class coming in, and all of a sudden he has a mediocre program and mediocre schedule and results like you all are having this year, and he's let go. I'll also say that the problem is that unlike football, there's not – a huge pool of star caliber talent coaching out there. You've got a real small sample size to choose from, and there is a huge drop off from that top 10 type coaching pedigree to everybody else. And so it becomes difficult to make a move to say, I'm going to make a move because I can get somebody. The problem is there's just not that somebody that's out there that's going to make that kind of shockwaves that a program needs.
Yeah, and I think you're playing the balancing game too, because, you know, like Drew said, you got the Anthony Grant, you know, in 2009, the guy that was, you know, the hottest coaching name, and I don't think Shaka Smart's going to leave VCU. I think he kind of, set that standard when he signed that long-term contract. I think it was after last season. But I think you're right. It's not like football. You don't have all these guys, you know, oh, this is a hot name. I mean, I couldn't even name you the top 5 or 10, you know, guys that Alabama would try to hire. I mean, I'm just bringing up names from, you know, the last coaching search that are still at their same, you know, present schools.
No, you're right. I think that the formula for coaching basketball is different than the formula for coaching football. I think that you've got one of two things. Like Anthony Grant, you're exactly right. He's a defensive-minded coach. He does a great job of getting, you know, I think he gets a lot out of lesser talent. That's why he does really good at VCU. Versus, you know, and maybe a Martin is the same thing. But when you're recruiting this caliber, because you're right, I didn't know about Alabama's recruiting class, and I was kind of like, Nick, I mean, I assume you know what you're talking about because you're clearly researched on this. But you're right, it's unbelievable the number of 4 and 5 stars he's gotten in the last 4 or 5 years. And I don't think those type of kids, I think you need to be more of like a John Calipari, you know, I let the stars do what they want to do. We run a dribble drive offense. And don't get me wrong, I think John Calipari is a very good coach. And I've got a point to make about that with what's your big guy's name? Randall, is that right?
Yeah.
Julius Randall, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, I think it's tough. I think it's just a different style of coaching, and you really need to – you need to have, like, Bruce Pearl is made to coach at a big school like this because he is all about promoting that athlete and letting them play versus a Grant where he's probably a little more about discipline, and you get these 5-star kids that are used to being kind of prima donnas, and he's probably checking them and putting them in their place.
He could do well at Vanderbilt's what you're saying.
Yeah, I like Anthony Grant. I think he's a good coach.
I do too.
If he got let go, I absolutely think he should be one of the – you know, it's one of those things where you wouldn't be upset, Nick, if he was let go, but if Auburn hired him, they would be ecstatic, you know? It's kind of the same – you know, it's kind of the same as he's almost run his course where you would – I don't think you would shed a tear if he left. I mean, you'd be fine with it. You'd be excited about the new coach. But it is tough. I mean, it's just – for the type of player that he's recruiting, you know, it just doesn't really fit at Alabama. And it's weird because, look, I mean, you've got Wichita State going undefeated. I mean, they clearly don't have the same caliber of player that Alabama's getting. He's just coaching them differently, and he's building a team as opposed to at your big schools. It's difficult to have the patience to build a program.
Yeah, and, you know, I think just the embodiment of this, I don't know how much you guys know about Trevor Lacy's transfer, but that was exactly it. You know, he didn't really talk to the media, and then when he got up to NC State, obviously sitting out this year, that's exactly what he said. He said, you know, Coach Grant and I just didn't fit into a system. I mean, I saw Trevor Lacy play in AAU basketball. He's an Alabama guy. He's just a scorer. He's a pure scorer. He's like any other top player that you see in the NCAA at guard. You know, you look at all these guys that have come out. I mean, he wants to be that star guy. He wants to have the ball in his hands in the final minutes. And guess what Anthony Grant's going to do? He's not going to trust Trevor Lacy. I mean, I know he did have a game winner or two, but he's going to put it in some guy like Trevor Relford's hands, some guy that's paid his dues. And like you're saying, he wants to create that team atmosphere. And I think you're right. And, you know, it's kind of weird to sit here and say that Alabama's recruiting success may be Anthony Grant's downfall, but there's a guy in state who handles this kind of talent well, and I don't think Alabama would ever hire him because, and I'm talking about Jared Haas at UAB. He's a guy that was coached under at UNC most recently, and then at Bill Self at Kansas as well. He knows this run and gun style offense. He knows the basketball brand that they play in the Big 12 and the ACC, and you know the board. I don't think would ever approve that hire. You know, I mean, that's like almost like hiring Auburn's coach or something. You know, that's stooping pretty low. But I think you're right, and that's an interesting point. I've never really thought about that, Drew, but it's just crazy to think about, you know, in football, recruiting success almost instantly means, you know, bowl victories, but here Alabama's struggling for it. So
you were going to bring reference back to the Big Blue Nation. Were you talking Willie Cauley-Stein or Julius Randle?
No, I was talking about Julius Randle. I was listening to you know Bill Simmons. He does the NBA countdown. He's got Grantland. He's you know pretty famous sports writer out there. But I was listening to a podcast of his, and you know I wonder. Tell me what you think about this. He was concerned or not concerned about the way that Calipari's using Randle and how he's keeping him so close to the basket and he wants him to play a certain role. Do you think that Randle is boxed in at all? Like, Julius Randle's a good three-point shooter and he doesn't really shoot threes because that doesn't fit what Calipari needs him to do. So do you think that Randle's being used to the best of his ability, or what's your thoughts on that?
I think so. When we're Calipari excels is making them play a certain role that needs to be filled for the good of the team. And you've got a number of three-point shooters. I mean, you've got Young, you got the twins. You've got enough people out there, but you don't have that body that can be down low and be a presence. And the thing is, when you've got to prove that for him to help his stock moving forward to get to the NBA, because it doesn't matter if he can shoot threes in college. If he still has that trait and that ability, that can still transfer into the pro game. But if he's not physical and he's not able to be a presence down in the paint, that could hurt his NBA prospects. So in that aspect of his game, it only helps his draft stock going forward. And you know, you only got these kids for 1 year. Let's do the best we can with the pieces we have. We have other guys that can't get that physical down low, the Harrison twins, Young. So let's keep them on the perimeter. Let them shoot the threes that they want to. Provide that dribble drive to get the ball dished out to hopefully make Randall free to get it down into the paint. So I do understand where Simmons is coming from on that, but I don't think it's a detriment to him in the long run.
See, I disagree with that almost wholeheartedly, just for the simple fact, and I had to look this up, but I agree with what you're saying if the NBA was like it was 15 years ago. But now it's 6'9", Randall's not going to be able to just bang down low with guys that are 7 feet tall. It's becoming so important to be able to shoot and have an outside jumper. And I don't, like I said, I'm not trying to make a debate, is this the best thing for Randall? I'm saying, you're obviously not happy with where Kentucky is. And while I think James Young is a great basketball player, he's just not putting the ball in the basket. He's not making enough shots. So maybe could Julius Randle be used differently? And you don't have to have the answer to this. I was just trying, you know, just kind of have a debate. I would like to see, as if I was a Kentucky fan, to let Randle have a little more free reign, kind of like a Jabari Parker does at Duke, where he can get some outside shots, where he can he can kind of be, and it's tough to say, I'm not saying he's not a dominant player. The guy's averaging 16 points and 10 rebounds. He's averaging a double-double. So it's just, you know, they've lost 5 or 6 games this year. Would that have been the difference, giving him a little more free reign to be the kind of player he was in high school, to where they don't lose that first LSU game and they don't lose a couple of the other games that they've lost?
I mean, that's a thought. No. I mean, you make valid points, and the thing about it is we'll never know. It's hard to watch this talent that's on the Kentucky program and to listen to me talk. They've only got 3 losses. Like you said, they're, you know, top 15 program. There's a good chance they're going to be maybe a 2, depending on how they do in the tournament, probably going to be a 3 seed. So they're going to have a decent road, but it's just so disappointing to sit there and watch them. I mean, there's times that there's just no energy with this group. I mean, Saturday to have to go to overtime against LSU at Rupp Arena, only win by a point against a program that dominated you 2 or 3 weeks ago with their home court. This should have been a game that a no-brainer that Kentucky was up for that game. They should have had so much fire and spirit and domination on the court in Kentucky at Rupp Arena, and for them to come away with the 1-point victory in overtime against LSU. It's just, it's disheartening. It's worrisome. And then they're going to turn around. They got to play Arkansas again Thursday, another team that they lost to. And Arkansas is a better team. Thank God they're playing away where they are not a good team. But it's just, it's difficult to watch them come in and do that when you see so much talent. And that's where it's difficult for that one and done, is to get that chemistry. I mean, look at the way Florida plays. You see that depth that they have and that experience, and it pays off. I mean, they were able to help pull through a tough game tonight at Vanderbilt just from their experience. I mean, it's one of their best starts they've ever had in the SEC. I think they're 15-0 right now in the SEC play.
Number 1 in the nation. You can't get much better than that, can you?
And this is their best SEC regular season to date, I believe, is what I saw today with this win. So, you know, it's that's what's troublesome and worrisome for me as a Kentucky fan. It's just just a lack of where that motivation comes from.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to compare the two best teams in the SEC. I mean, we talk about this every single year, and it, you know, Shane, I'm sure that you can attest to this, and it probably gets old talking about this, but it seems like, I think it's only been 2 years, but it seems like 2 or 3, 4 years now that we've been talking about, well, Calipari's team is really going to hit their stride one of these days. You know, we're just waiting for that game to happen. And I mean, granted, they are 17th in the nation right now, but you kind of expect more, especially with the recruiting class coming in. And, you know, as a college basketball fan, even though SEC play hasn't been great, I mean, let's just kind of praise Florida for a second here. Is it just not amazing to watch them play? I mean, Alabama has played them hard twice. I mean, one game they only lost by 6. I mean, you just look at Florida's schedule and the teams that they've grinded it out against. I mean, obviously they had 2 early season losses against top 20 teams in Wisconsin and Connecticut, but they're on a roll. And, I mean, you just look at the talent list here. They've got 2 of the best forwards that, you know, on the given night could really explode for them, and Patrick Young and what's that other guy's name? I can't remember. Yuli, I think it is. I mean, he's kind of inconsistent, but he can have a big game. They've got shooters. They've got Wilbekin at the point. I mean, it's just incredible. And I haven't seen a team play like they do in some time. And I think it's, you know, just kind of speaks wonders to what Billy Donovan has done and, you know, what it actually means to have a couple of guys stay around and set that temperament, set that tempo on the court, but also, you know, set the locker room feel as well.
There, yeah, Florida's definitely a solid team. I'm not penciling them in as the national champions yet in my bracket, but maybe I should. It's been an incredibly impressive season for them.
Will their luck run out though? I kind of talked about that with Auburn and football when we were talking about how lucky they were. I mean, because they've had a bunch of squeakers. I mean, they've squeaked by a number of games, and once you get into tournament time, you know, you don't get that second chance. It's one and done. Is it better for them to go on and get that loss? We hate talking about that, but it does happen that all of a sudden you get that loss, you get that reality check, and you can go perform so much better when it comes tournament time.
Well, I think it's kind of like, they'd have to lose. They've got at least 4 games left. They've got 3 conference game and at minimum 1 game in the tournament. So I think that they can easily lose 1 more game and be a number 1 seed. I don't know necessarily. I think there's something to be about being on a roll too. So they've almost, you know, they haven't lost since they lost to Connecticut back in December, the beginning of December. So
are you foreshadowing the last regular season game, Drew?
Yeah, you know, that would be a great game against Kentucky on March 8th. So that's exciting. I think they could definitely lose that game.
It's in Florida though. That would be tough for them to lose.
Not that hard to play down there.
No, horrible. It's easy. Everybody's asleep down there at the O-Dub.
Dude, I'll go ahead and tell you, man. Bruce Pearl wasn't afraid to sweat through a suit down there and beat a little Florida. See, that's the thing. That's what's tough is I'm not afraid of Florida because when Bruce Pearl was here, we beat them twice a year. Now that's been, you know, it's been 3+ years ago, and we haven't won since, you know. But
and you know, speaking to the point we were just talking about, I'm not sure, and I'm not sure I'm ready to make a statement about this. I think, Drew, I think your point is very valid. You know, you look at a Wichita State or somebody like that, somebody who's just rolling, and, you know, you talk about momentum. The last thing I would want to do is kind of go out, you know, I mean, if you're Florida, you obviously want to win the SEC championship, give you that momentum going into the tournament. But at the same time, I mean, I'm just kind of bringing this up, but is Florida going to pay the price for having to run a, you know, even if they go, let's just say they win their last 3 games, which that Kentucky game is going to be a hard one, even though it's at home. I mean, if they go 18-0 in the SEC, I mean, they did what they should have done. They went undefeated, you know, probably a number 1 seed. But are they going to pay the price that, you know, maybe Duke or Kansas or all these teams are, you know, when they're playing such a hard schedule in conference? I mean, I think this is what we talk about in football a little bit. I mean, do you pay a price, or is Florida going to be ready for that competition? I mean, obviously they're one of the top teams in the nation, but just not being tested by a top opponent, you know, on a weekly basis, will they pay that price?
You know, I think that's a good point. I think, but you got to look what they did out of conference, and they played Wisconsin, they played Connecticut, they played Kansas, they played Memphis. They're going to have games against Kentucky. So I think they've got some battle-tested games. I think that that's a good point. I think it's going to affect more like a Wichita State than it will a Florida. But that's a great point. I agree. You know, I would be a little worried about that as an SEC team.
I would be as well, except for the fact that even then they struggled a little bit. I mean, tonight against Vanderbilt, they won by a 3-second shot late in the game with less than, I don't know, 40 seconds to go or something like that. And I don't have their schedule pulled up in front of me, but they've had two or three close away games. And that's the one thing about the SEC is it can be difficult to play in a away game no matter how bad that team is you're going up against.
That is true. Hey, Shane, do we have a few minutes if we want to jump off of basketball? We had the NFL Combine the last few days. Is it okay if we can we go into football for a minute?
Yeah, please. I'm.
What's your thought? I mean, we got a chance for, you know, there's obviously this is a crazy year because there's a lot of different options still open for the number one draft pick. If you're a GM, are you looking at Johnny Manziel as your number one pick? What about Jadeveon Clowney? What are your thoughts?
If I'm Houston, I'm taking Clowney.
He ran like a 4.5 40 at 250 something pounds, I think.
I mean, just think about that defense down in Houston. If you've got J.J. Watt on one side and Clowney on the other, that's just ridiculous. And so, yeah, Manziel's, you know, he's got the flash. He's going to sell tickets. It's just you look at these quarterbacks that are mobile, and unless you're Russell Wilson who avoids making those stupid plays, Manziel makes stupid plays.
That's true.
Wilson did not. Wilson does not make stupid plays. He gets out of trouble, gets the yards. He's got the legs when he needs to. But, I mean, RG3, you know, he made some stupid plays. And look what it did to his knee. And this year I don't think he was ever the same. So when you get those mobile quarterbacks that have that complex where they can accomplish anything and do anything – when you get up against the speed of the NFL, that's going to be a little more difficult. I would rather take my chances and get a quarterback somewhere in the second and third round, and not have that franchise quarterback and get that defense solidified. But that's me.
That's the move they made when they were deciding between Reggie Bush and Mario Williams. They went with the defensive player. So there is a precedence that they've done that. And they could have also looked at Vince Young. So they had that option of a quarterback, and they went with Mario Williams, which is probably the right pick. So maybe they do it again.
What would you do?
It would be tough for me not to take a quarterback unless I was convinced that he was going to be a bust, just because I see how important the quarterback position is. I feel like in the NFL, if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to make, you know, a big run in the playoffs. I think it's the most important position. I don't like how Clowney played this year. He even came out and said that he would have come out if he could have. Maybe he was just taken off, but he would have to impress me in those interviews and let me know that he is going to play, you know, his butt off. Now, that being said, I don't know that I would take Johnny Manziel, and I don't think we know enough about, like, a Blake Bortles. I'm not really sold on Bridgewater either, so it might be just like...
That's me. I go second round, and I get a Murray, a Mettenberger.
You probably get a David Carr out of Fresno State in the second round. So I think there's some good talent. But, you know.
And there's been precedent set that there is franchise quarterbacks that come after the first round.
Sure, absolutely. Russell Wilson, you know, was a later round pick.
Brady was a sixth rounder. I mean, you've got tons and tons of these guys that are out there. And so, you know, I don't want to pin my hopes on being a franchise quarterback just because, let's face it, a lot of Manziel's rise is a PR machine. I mean, the talk and the news loves him. The sports casters love him. I mean, we all love to watch him. He's exciting. But how does that translate into talent? And that's where the NFL, you know, weeds you out. Where's your talent level?
That's true. What do you think about your Alabama boys? I know I'm trying to look it up. I know Haha had a good 40 time, a 4.5 from him. I think it's pretty impressive. I was going to look up Mosley and see how he did on his some of his measurables. Have you followed that at all, Nick? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I don't think Mosley actually ran. He's been a little limited. I think he's going to run at Pro Day. I think the most interesting thing for Alabama is a guy that has really seen his draft stock plummet. I don't know if I would – maybe plummet's the wrong word, but, you know, coming into his junior year, Cyrus Kwanjo at left tackle was this guy that – I mean, he was in number one pick. You know, he was being mentioned in that because, you know, you got a guy that's got the size at 6'6", 220 – or 320, not 220. And, you know, just left tackle, we've seen, you know, Eric Fisher and all those guys last year – and so many other people. I mean, that is, you know, a pick that is, you know, definitely a top five pick. But he did not work out well at all. I mean, a 5.59 40. I mean, 40s don't really matter. But a 21 on bench. I mean, this guy is 6'6", 322, thought to be one of the best left tackles to ever come out of Alabama. And he didn't have a great bowl season. He really didn't have a great junior year. I don't know. That's kind of what sticks out to me. Like you said, Haha Clinton Dix. I've always loved him. He reminds me a little bit of Mark Barron. He's one of these guys in the secondary that's really physical. You know, I wouldn't use the word headhunter, but obviously he was called for a couple targeting penalties this year. One of them was over reversed. But, yeah, I don't know. That is Saban's mantra, you know, the secondary guys, the cornerbacks and the safeties. I think if you look at one guy, I think Haha Clinton Dix out of Alabama is probably the safest pick if you're looking at these guys. You look at C.J. Mosley, there's been a lot of questions with his size, and is he going to be able to play, you know, a full three downs in the NFL and take that hit? I mean, from what I see, I mean, I think we'll all admit he's one of the best Alabama linebackers in history, which is saying a lot, and he's got speed. I wish he would have been able to run because I think he could have really blown the 40 out of the water if he would have had a good day. But I don't know. I think kind of going back to what you guys were talking about as well, there's so many risks. And if you look at it as a GM, I mean, it kind of scares me just talking about this. I mean, every single player, even Jadeveon Clowney, this guy that, you know, we see is just a physical freak, a guy that could fall out with any team that he goes to. And we're sitting here asking, does he have the motor? Is he going to give you, you know, what you deserve out of a first round, even a first pick in the draft? And I don't know. I mean, that just really scares me, just looking at how much they pay these guys. And, you know, Asaris Kwanjo, I mean, obviously he's a good player, but not measuring it out isn't the end of the world at the combine, but you certainly want to make the best impressions here right before the draft.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, don't you hate it this year if you're the Texans where I think you're happy with a few players at the number one pick, but you look back at, you know, Andrew Luck, I still say he was a can't miss. And while Russell Wilson, I think you're happy with him at quarterback, but Andrew Luck has just been so impressive, and it almost makes you think, how happy were the Colts to just go ahead and bench Peyton Manning and tank it up and get him? I mean, that's just a good timing, and I think that was a smart move by the Colts. So you're right. There's a lot of risk. So when you can find a year where there's a guarantee, that's got to be so valuable.
Now let me ask you, Drew. You brought up the combine. Some of your volunteer guys had some pretty good showings too, especially some linemen and stuff, right?
Yeah, I think that's really the only position that Tennessee had anybody really do anything. We had some linemen. Juwan James did fine. I think he's improved his draft stock a little bit. Tiny Richardson's draft stock has been going down a little bit, although he did perform pretty well. He was the second most reps in the bench press with like 36. He's a freak. He's a big guy, and he's. I think that he will be a solid second or third round pick. But yeah, I think there are some players that help themselves out. Unfortunately, you know, there's just as evidenced by another season not making a bowl game, there wasn't a lot of talent that's, you know, going to be drafted. It's definitely a down year for Tennessee.
All right. Anything else you guys want to add before we wrap this thing up tonight? Anywhere you want to go that we didn't go?
Just one more thing about the combine. I mean, sure. I don't want to shed too much light on Auburn, but they did have a great season this year. And you look at two guys for them. Dee Ford, kind of a vocal guy, and he is just a beast on the field. You know, he's kind of a little bit different than Jadeveon Clowney, but he's just a solid pass rusher. He's a guy that I think could make a big splash in the NFL. He actually didn't participate in any combine activities, I don't think, after sitting here post-national championship game and telling us that, you know, I'm going to blow up the combine. Just wait. You haven't seen anything yet. And, you know, obviously I think he's going to work out at Pro Day. But, you know, once again, you see two guys at Auburn that could technically or go in the first round, and they could be can't-miss guys. And then Greg Robinson, a guy that just showed up at the combine, and, you know, he really saw a lot of media coverage in the national championship game, once again at that left tackle position. But, you know, coming into the season, I don't think anybody in the nation had Greg Robinson getting picked over Cyrus Quanjo. But now, I mean, I have to say,
Here's what's crazy, Nick. You're exactly right. I think Robinson might have – he's lined himself up to where, you know, I could see him being a top five pick. I mean, I think he's passed maybe everybody except for a Matthews out of Texas A&M. But even then, with as good of a combine as he had, I think he ran a sub five, like a 4.94 40. It's ridiculous. Yep. How you're exactly right. His name has just shot up the draft board. And another Auburn player that, as a Titans fan, I would absolutely love to have, and he might be a bust, but I would love, love, love to have Trey Mason.
Yep.
I was super impressed by him this last year. You get a little worried with the amount of reps that he got. I mean, he was toting the ball, you know, 30-plus times a game at the end of the season. But he just is one of those guys that just his motor kept going in late in games. I mean, he impressed me as a gamer, and then his measurables were really, really strong at the combine, running a, you know, 4.45 or something, 40. So,
but the good news about that, Drew, from a Titan standpoint is the way that rookie salary cap is structured now. You know, you can get a running back like that, and they're starting to become, you know, a handful of good running backs every single year, and all you got to do is just replace them in 3 years when this contract starts to get big.
Yeah. And I don't know if you this was funny. I'll do a shout out. My brother, who's been on the show, Brett Young, he's been on the podcast before. He tweeted out, you know, Chris Johnson was, you know, he was following the combine, and he said something about, you know, Dree Archer had your boy worried. You know, he was so worried about somebody breaking his 40 time. And my brother tweeted to Paul Kaharski, who does he blogs for ESPN on the AFC South. He said, I wish Chris Johnson was more worried about breaking tackles than he was about somebody breaking his record. And it's funny because Paul Kaharski responded back to him and then actually included my brother's tweet in an article on ESPN. So definitely a good tweet. You're exactly right. He's exactly right. Like, if this guy cared half as much about, you know, performing in the pros as he did about, you know, a stupid record at the combine, you know, maybe he wouldn't be.
We wouldn't be talking
block with an $8 million cap.
We would be talking about letting him go as a Titans fans and looking for somebody else.
I would absolutely endorse that. $8 million is way too much for a running back that can't break tackles. And, you know, he's averaging 4.5 yards a carry, which is fine. But, you know, we're paying him, as a Titans fan, we're paying him for a 2,000-yard season 4 years ago. So, I'll just take Trey Mason.
All right. Guys, thank you all for being on here. Drew, people can find you anywhere?
Yeah, you can follow me at DrewYoung20. Pretty tame. You know, I've had to tame it up a little bit on Twitter with being a school teacher and all. So, don't want my kiddos following me and seeing the bad language. But you never know. I might have a good R-rated one during a Tennessee game every once in a while.
They still sneak out, don't they?
Yeah, every once in a while. You just can't. You got to let them out.
Now, I saw some tweets going back and forth. You've got Vegas lined up again this year. Is that?
Oh, yeah. Vegas is an every year thing. So we have Vegas 14. I don't know where we'll stay, but it's just around the corner. And here's a shout out. I like to give shout outs for TV shows or movies. I don't know if either one of y'all are watching, but you should be watching HBO True Detective. It's a wonderful, wonderful show. Only 6 episodes in. It's only 8 seasons. Kind of like a mini series. It'll be done after 1 year, and then I'll get a new cast. But if you're not watching, it's something y'all should be doing.
I've not seen it. You know me.
Well, there you go. happy birthday. There's 8 hours of awesomeness coming your way.
Well, thank you. I'll get right on that. Nick, anything for you? I know people can follow your writing and on Twitter and Google, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a ton of places, and you can find me anywhere, really. You can just search that, Nick Jones. But one plug I want to give, Bama Hammer is a part of the Fansided Network, which there's a lot of sports networks out there. But if you guys are into mobile devices, I'm sure everybody has one by now. Fansided just released their new Android app. They've got a new iOS app as well. It's a great way, you know, whether you're a Kentucky fan or an Auburn fan, anywhere, we've got a team just about, or a site just about for every SEC team. We'd love for you to subscribe to the Bama Hammer feed in there. But anyway, it's a great way. You can get your writing from fans. A lot of the guys that write for us are fans. It's kind of the same temperament as this podcast, but it can be delivered straight to your phone. And, you know, you can download that in the iOS App Store or the Google Play Store as well. So check that out.
Awesome. And if you wish to follow me, I'm at P. Shane Bailey. Or you can follow SECSRT anywhere you get podcasts or RSS feeds. We also are on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter. So, guys, with that, thank you all so much for listening in, and we'll call this podcast done.